It's 8:07. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. It's time for the Week in Review, our weekly look at the top news stories from a couple of different perspectives. My guests this morning are Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee and a former Democratic state lawmaker, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin and also a former state lawmaker. And I believe that both of you were sworn into the state assembly in 1986.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Right. Good morning. Good morning. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
Good. Good.
So those were good times.
Margaret always points out, we both took on sitting incumbents in our own party in primaries and won, which is kind of unusual, and then went on to win the generals. So it was kind of a double thing that year.
Correct.
Well, I think, go ahead, Margaret. I keep interrupting you.
No, that's okay. That was
all right.
Just the case. It was a very unique time. There wasn't a lot of freshmen that year. Five in my caucus. I don't remember how many in your caucus.
Six.
See, only 11 new ones. And those of us who were new got to know each other.
All right. Well, let's get started here. The United States Supreme Court is busy handing down decisions on some fairly big cases. We'll talk about a couple of them in just a little bit, but it was a certain opinion that did not come down this week that's making headlines, the national health care law. So we wait with bated breath, with anticipation through this weekend for whatever the high court rules next week. Louis Fortas, we'll start with you. How do you think this is going to turn out, and do you think the law should stand?
I'll start with the latter. Yes, I think the law should stand. It wasn't exactly the way I would have done it, but what I would have done probably would have been less popular in that. I think we should have even gone further in terms of curbing some of the influence of the private insurance companies. But there's all this discussion always by the conservatives about the liberal activist judges. Well, we will see if the conservative activist judges will overturn something that was passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president. And here's the real problem, is that most people like the parts of the bill. And one of the biggest parts that people like is this preventing insurance companies from denying people that have pre-existing conditions. And the only way something like that can work is if you have universal health coverage, because otherwise either you wait till your pre-existing condition causes a problem, and then you get health insurance. And insurance companies won't do that, obviously, because it's a pre-existing condition. So the only way that you can make the pre-existing condition issue work is with universal coverage. And one way to do it is an individual mandate, and that has been the Republican approach. So it is kind of the whole thing is kind of ironic. It's highly, highly political, as we all know. And again, if you take it apart and ask people about the individual parts, they like it. When it's all put together, they call it a government takeover, and they don't like it. So we'll see what happens, and I fear that some good policy will be struck down.
Margaret Farrow, what do you think the court will decide, and why do you think it should be struck down?
Well, I think it's everyone's guessing game. There's no question about it. And we've seen comparisons of who will vote which way and which way it will break and all this sort of thing. And will they go totally against the bill as a whole? Will they just rule certain parts of it unconstitutional? I think they're going to rule in some way to take it down and to either sweep the whole thing out and start over or especially attack the and rule the mandate, where they're telling the American people what they must do in a way that has never been done before. They'll rule that unconstitutional. The thing that troubles me with this, though, is when this bill was passed by only Democratic votes, and that's happened before, I'm just making that point, that it was done in that manner in both houses. Nancy Pelosi, at that time leading the House of Representatives, said, "We won't know what's in it until we pass it." Well, that was true, because it was so big and so overwhelming, the legislators didn't know. But now the question is, does America know? I know that Lou has made some strong points just now for his take on it, but there are so many elements in this bill, first of all, that haven't been determined because they're being developed by rule within the administration and kind of dropped on the country unilaterally when that department who has that responsibility decides how they're going to implement it. It's really a case of we won't know what's in this bill and its impact on us until they decide how to affect us and what element to put out there. And I guess the thing that troubles me is there is certainly need to correct some of the problems in our health care in this country. We often hear the expression, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. In this case, I don't think anyone has any comprehension how far-reaching this bill could change this country and its healthcare systems until they see it coming across the land. There was a guarantee by the president: everyone can keep their insurance if they want it. Everyone can keep their doctor if that's what they want to do. And we clearly know now that is not the case now as it would be implemented. So I think it's time to start over, take a clean sheet of paper, begin to perhaps address the cost of health care as much as those ugly insurance companies that everybody points to that have to become the filter between the money and the providers without the provider side of it being clearly addressed also.
Well, Margaret, if this law is struck down, what will happen with health care in this country, and not the political fallout, but actual health care? I mean, what's the alternative then?
Well, I think, first of all, there are things already implemented, and I'm not sure how they're going to untangle those if they have to be untangled from what is already in place. There's, you know, the tentacles of this bill have reached into how we do some of our health care right now. For example, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lou or you, John, I believe the 26-year-old coverage for young people with their family policy is implemented already, and I believe it was originated as one of the many parts of this bill. So what happens to that if the whole bill is struck down? This is going to keep lawyers busy for a long time in the governmental side and in the company side trying to sort it out. But the other thing that I would say is each of our states has a commissioner of insurance office that has strong control over, and our state is considered to have a very good one and a very well-functioning commissioner of insurance office compared to other states perhaps. But each one of our states does, in fact, have the controls right now to begin to address some of the problems. The legislatures in each state have already addressed things with some of the, you know, that word again, mandates within the state's choice to make sure things are being covered. And so I don't think we're going to have that much of a problem. The problem will be untangling the things that are already in the bill and keeping those things perhaps that people in general want to see continue to be part of our health care scene.
Lewis Fortas, what do you think will happen if we don't actually get a bill, if the court strikes this down? What's going to happen with health care?
The insurance companies will just keep raising the rates. I have a small business. I have about 30 employees. Last year, they came back, and it was 27% over the year before. You know, kind of take it or leave it. So you say shop it around, find out what, and you come back, and that's one of the, it's about in the, well, I think it was, we stayed with it, so I think it was the lowest one of the other choices out there. That's what's going to continue to happen. So employers are going to be squeezed, and I have not cut back on. We pay 80%, the employee pays 20%. Some companies have now been forced to do 50-50. We continue to pay 80%. But again, it's a 27% increase. It's really, really difficult. So what's going on here is do you want government control, or do you want where you actually have, you know, this is representative democracy, where you do have some control, or do you want it just left in the hands of the insurance companies where you have absolutely no control? And that's what's going on. But I think one thing that is very interesting in our history that most people don't pay much attention to, and that is when Social Security was first passed, it was, you know, socialism, it was terrible. The opposition party ran against Roosevelt that they were going to, you know, undo Social Security and all. And now people love it because they got used to it. They understand what it is. Medicare was another one. Socialism, terrible government takeover. And now when you saw those Tea Party people running around with signs saying, don't let the government take my don't let the government get in my way of my Medicare. Well, it is the government, folks. And so people liked it but didn't even realize, you know, who was paying the bill. I mean, that's what's going on is that we did not, and I fault the Obama administration, they did not slowly, week by week, educate the public as to what was going on, what was in the bill, why it was important, and why you just can't pick certain things out of the bill. The bill is such that unless you have that universal coverage, other things fall apart. And that's why if they do strike down the universal mandate or whatever term you want to use, universal coverage, the individual mandate, then the whole thing is going to collapse. Sure, you can still keep the health care for children up to the age of 26, which some of the insurance companies are saying, no matter what happens, we're going to continue to do it. It's become so popular. So we'll see what happens, but it'll be interesting. All these people that complain about activist liberal judges, let's see what the activist conservative judges do and whether they will just simply strike down the most major piece of legislation passed by both houses of Congress in the first 2 years of Obama's administration.
Well, if the court upholds the law, Mitt Romney has been saying that if he's elected, he will repeal it. And with a new AP poll this week saying only a third of Americans approve of the law, might Romney actually get a boost if the law stands? Margaret Farrell, why don't you go first on that one?
Well, I think it's who knows? I mean, we're running headline politics now. I mean, and that's unfortunate in a way. We ought to be looking, you know, at the depths of policy making that instead of just what flashes across the headline today. But I think the candidate Obama, if he's a candidate, and a lot of what he's doing is a candidate, President Obama, I would say. But Romney will undoubtedly want to address it. If it's struck down, there is still, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of Obamacare that is already in place, and it perhaps he's going to have to see to the disentangling, as I said, if that's a word you want to use, of how to get us back to where we were. I would agree completely. Something has to be done. I don't know, and I understand Lou's comparison with the Medicare growth and with the original Social Security. Problem was, when Social Security was put in place by FDR, it wasn't for 62-year-olds or 65-year-olds or whatever who have been making their way along in the world and some who had trouble doing that. It was for widows and children who needed support from the public side because they were left in a situation that made them really impossible to carry on their life as one would hope people were able to in this country. And so it kind of was it was turned up gradually in all sorts of functions to the point now where it's everybody's form of retirement program, base retirement program, you might say. And the same thing can be true for Medicare and the growth of Medicare. The fear is, how will any part of this continue to grow? We know already Medicare is sinking our budget, our federal budget, the expansion of it. Medicaid is sinking every state budget right now. We're beginning to carry a burden we cannot afford, as we're finding out. So, as I say, I just think health care has to be addressed, no question about it. Was this the way? I don't think so at all. Is it based on the Constitution that the ruling would be made? I believe it will be. I don't think that's the activism in the way many of us on the conservative side say activist liberal judges act, by creating new law, not reviewing and enacting and making decisions on the basis of the law that is in place.
Lewis Fortas, do you think Mr. Romney will get a boost if the court doesn't strike down the law?
Yeah, I agree with Margaret. I think this is it's really hard to predict. The biggest problem is this is really, really complicated stuff. And I chaired the insurance committee in the state legislature back when Margaret and I were there, and I was asked to put together a health care plan for lower income people and smaller businesses and the like. And I'll tell you, I've never worked on anything that complicated in my life. And you know, I'm a trained economist, which is complicated stuff. This was more complicated. It really, really is complicated. And as a result, it's really difficult to, you know, to explain to the public, and it's difficult even for the for most of the legislators. I think Nancy Pelosi was right, Margaret, as we know. I mean, the complicated bills in the state legislature would shoot through more easily than the real simple ones, because the simple ones everyone understood and they'd fight about it. The ones that were so complicated, they just would get through.
I'd agree with that.
They would trust a few of the leaders. What?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right.
Yeah, so we have they would trust the leaders and let it go.
All right. Well, let's take a call here from Boyd in Milwaukee. Boyd, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, John, and good morning to you, Lewis, and also to you, Margaret. A few points I need to bring up, though, I think are really important. Well, personally speaking, I don't really think we have a healthcare system in this country in the grand scheme of things. We have a lot of splinter or small insurance companies that are really competing with each other, but I don't know if you can really call that a healthcare system. The thing is, if there is such a backlash to this, the problem that I see is that, well, in other industrialized countries, for the most part, when it comes to something like a universal system, most seem to look at it pretty favorably, and the reason is they look at healthcare as a social responsibility. And I think that's one thing we need to do in this country is look at healthcare as a social responsibility. If you're going to have it where we're not going to have something like a single-payer plan or a universal healthcare plan, the government needs to be intervened as a regulator. I believe if you just let the free market take control, companies are going to merge and rates are going to go up. Karl Rove one time said, well, people can choose their own car insurance, but what he failed to mention was that car insurance, maybe not on a national level, but on a state level, is regulated. I'm wondering your thoughts.
Margaret Farrell, why don't you go first, and then Lewis Fortas, and then we'll take a break.
Well, I think, you know, comparing us to the other, to the European models, we're certainly different, no question about it. Are they better? I don't know. I've had too many stories brought back to me from other countries about the level of health care, with some people going to, say, Germany and what have you, that have already cleared certain new procedures that are wonderful and all, because we're so cautious with the manner in which we do our medical approvals and our pharmaceutical approvals. I guess my problem is we are regulated. We have federal and state laws governing these operations. It isn't as though this is a wide open field. And I know Lou is right that this is very, very complicated, but I guess I have a problem. In this state, just take our state, we have some of the highest coverage for health care availability of any state in the country. Our Badger Care, which picks up as a strong safety net, the lowest level of our income people who are covered. And so we have it's just incredible. We've got probably 10% of our people still looking for coverage, and some of those, quite frankly, choose not to have it. We used to say, Lou and I, in the days we were there, it was the young people that were feeling, I'm immortal, I don't have to have health care coverage, I don't have to have automobile coverage, I won't do any of those things. And now we do mandate auto coverage as of about 2-3 years ago. But the health care now, they're covered by their family plan, if that is their social situation. I just think there is coverage of or controls. There are laws. There are every insurance company operating in Wisconsin has to show their books, has to show everything about it to be scrutinized and corrected and disciplined by our Commissioner of Insurance. And trust me, that's serious business. So I think we're in a totally different situation here in Wisconsin, and it's working, and it's going to be undone perhaps by some of this new law if that law isn't struck down.
Lewis Fortas, a quick take on Boyd's comment, and then we need to get to a break.
Okay, I generally agree with Boyd, and the fact is, compared to Europe and the like, they're providing very close to universal coverage for about half the cost in terms of percent of gross domestic product that goes to health care. And the other point I want to So, I mean, they're getting a lot more for their money because they're more regulated. And Margaret's right, we have an insurance commissioner, but also the insurance companies are so powerful that that insurance commissioner is pretty much works basically hand-in-hand with the, I regret to say, with the insurance companies, who actually are the ones who are taxed to pay for the insurance commissioner's office and salaries and everything. So it's too cozy a relationship. The insurance companies have far too much power, as everyone has seen over the last few years when the healthcare debates took place. So, I mean, yes, we have regulation in place, a regulator, but it's a kind of basically a toothless regulator.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk presidential politics. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8:29. You're listening to the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. My two guests, Louis Fortas and Margaret Farrow, are helping us sort through the big stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. Up next, presidential politics, dueling polls. The latest AP poll has Obama up by just 3% on Romney. And the Bloomberg poll, however, a much different spread, 53% for the president, 40% for Governor Romney. I don't know what we make of this, but Louis Fortas, give it a shot, and then Margaret Farrell.
In terms of what's going on right now, obviously Obama's up. Romney is it's early in the game. There's a ton of money that has already been raised and much, much more will be raised. The campaign will get very negative, very nasty, and it's going to be very hard to predict what's going on. But I do think Obama will win at the end of the day, and I also think that there is something, people view Romney as a flawed candidate in the same way, and I'll be fair here, bipartisan, that people viewed Al Gore as a flawed candidate. Both Romney and Gore are smart guys, are very ambitious, have good resumes, the whole deal. But they just have trouble relating to the average person. It's hard to explain what that actually means, but I think everyone listening has a sense of what I mean when you talk about people like Gore and Romney. You know, again, both very talented, but they can't connect. And I think that's going to be Romney's biggest problem, is that he just doesn't connect to people. So I think that Obama will ultimately win. But right now, polls are polls. You know, there's margins of error. There's, the fact that it's only 95% within that margin of error also. So there's outliers, and some of these could be outlier samples.
All right, Margaret Farrow, what do you make of these two polls? Do they mean anything at this point in the election cycle, or not?
Well, I think I learned from a person with a lot more experience than I have in politics, and that's kind of hard to say. He didn't believe polls, you might say, and he said right up to the end, the only poll that really counts is election day. That's kind of simplistic, but it's true. Just the example of these two polls show us what questions were asked, what was the field, how many people were asked, what was the timing. There are so many things, it's become such a scientific art, you might say, that you really have to go back and say, all right, tell me what you asked. Tell me how many people you asked. Tell me which days and what headline news story was breaking that day when you were asking these questions. In other words, that's how subjective these polls are. Addressing the candidacies, I think, it's my goodness, we're not out of June yet, and the election's in November, the primary for other races within that, and we thought perhaps we'd have a primary for the presidential race, people were saying it in the Republican side. Well, it is sorted out through all the various caucuses and primaries that we have a candidate. We have Governor Romney. I think it's going to be a fascinating debate. Two resumes matched together it's startling. And you're right, Lou. The Governor Romney, as Al Gore, I'll grant you, although his was mostly on the governmental side, Governor Romney has a definite resume, has a background that gives us, I think, a lot of security and satisfaction in what his experience level is that he would bring to this office. On the other hand, President Obama had no resume to speak of that understood not just economics, but applied economics. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting summer. I think the two conventions are interesting in their timing. My goodness, the Democratic convention is going to be in early September. I don't remember it ever being that late. It's going to be interesting to see what happens that late. And I agree there's going to be so much money, and I wish there was a way to control that. The money should not be determining the race.
2 weeks after the Republican Party's most controversial governor survived a high-stakes recall here in Wisconsin, Mitt Romney came to Janesville and said that he will, in fact, win the state in November. Margaret, no Republican has carried the Badger State since 1984. Is Romney going to break that string?
I certainly hope so, quite frankly. I think what Governor Walker has been subjected to and what the people of Wisconsin have reacted to in these last months tell us they're paying attention. People can say, well, the recall went the way it did because people really, the vote that made the difference was the vote against recalls. There could be some truth to that. But I keep looking for the sunny side of things. My sunny side of what we've gone through in the last 18, 19 months in Wisconsin has brought the Wisconsin people alive. I mean, they're alive to the public scene. They're alive to the public issues. They're concerned about their state and federal government in a way I don't think they have been up to now. And so I'm hoping they're paying attention, that they make knowledgeable decisions. And I think the Republican side of the ticket does have a chance this time, going back to the last time Reagan won the state.
Lewis, is President Obama still in pretty good position to win Wisconsin, do you think?
Well, I want to agree with Margaret on a number of things. First of all, I was disappointed, obviously, with the outcome of the recall election, but I was really heartened by what Margaret mentioned, that people began to pay attention much more than I've ever seen in my lifetime. And they really care, which is important. And now it's just a question of making sure they get fair information. And this is where the big money distorts it, because candidates are more reluctant to go negative, but when they have some independent group going negative for them, they can get real, real nasty. And they provide a ton of misinformation. So that's kind of the sad side of this whole situation. But 18%, I believe, was the number. 18% of the people in the exit polls that voted for Walker said they would also be voting for Barack Obama. So it was kind of a mixed bag. And Wisconsin voters do split the ticket. They'll vote, you know, for a Democrat for this office, a Republican for another office. And so I do believe Obama will win Wisconsin, but it's going to be a tough election, no question about it.
Okay. By the way, there was a poll from Marquette University that came out this week showing the president with a 49-43 lead in Wisconsin, down from 51-43 a month ago. Mitt Romney, moving on to another story though. Mitt Romney reportedly is asking Florida Governor Rick Scott to tone down his statements about the improvements in Florida's economy. And Lewis Fortas, what do you make of that?
It's kind of humorous, isn't it? You have the governors who want to take credit when things are good, and you have the presidential candidate saying, no, don't take credit for it, because, yeah, it might help you, but it's also hurting me. So downplay what you think is positive news. You know, again, this is that whole question of making sure the public gets fair information. And so I think if Rick Scott wants to take credit for Florida's economy improving, he should. And he should be honest about what the improvements are.
Well, Mitt Romney says those statements clash with the message he's sending, that President Obama is hurting the economy. Margaret, is that fair?
Oh, I think this is politics. The issue, I think, is Governor Romney is looking at the country as a whole. Governor Romney is looking at the chart and the line on the chart that says where our economy, our unemployment, everything else, our manufacturing levels, where they're going. Now, we're seeing the unemployment still down, which tells us the recession is either back in swing or we're heading back into a second dip of into a recession. There are pockets around the country. Take North Dakota, and perhaps, as we're hearing from Governor Scott, Florida. There are unique parts of the country that are showing strengths incrementally. When we're tracking strengths, we're saying that curve is going up slightly. We're not seeing gigantic improvements, except perhaps in North Dakota, where the people are really having a boom economy right now because of the oil and everything else that we're finding up there and the way they're developing it now. But until it's stopped, unfortunately, if the EPA decides something's wrong. But the issue is it's going up there. My sense is what Governor Romney's message is that he, in charge of the country as president, would be able to really address the economy in a much stronger way than this president is. That's his message. And he's perhaps saying, yeah, there's some good spots, and maybe we'll point to those ultimately before November. But right now, let's kind of all make sure that we are addressing the problems. Lemon and lemonade. Got some lemonade along with it, but we've got some lemons here, and one of the big lemons is our economy. And I think in the end, in November, the economy, and that translates very individually into jobs and into your marketplace where you live. I think the economy and those issues are going to be the rule of the decision making in this voting that we'll do in November.
All right, there was some.
Can I respond to some of this, because this gets into the economics, and this is one area.
Okay, go ahead.
Fairly comfortable with. This was a financial recession, and you had banks failing, you had bank bailouts, you had a housing market that totally collapsed. Most economists who study the history of recessions, depressions, and the like say that when you have a financial recession, it takes a long time to recover, and somewhere people are saying something in the range of about 10 years. Right now, we need more stimulus, not this focus on cutting, which is what's going on. Europe approached it by the cutting approach, and right now there's one person in Europe wanting to continue that policy, Angela Merkel, and most of the other nations in Europe are saying, this is ridiculous. You have to stimulate the economy. What Romney is proposing is what Europe just recently tried, and it failed. It's what Herbert Hoover did when he was president and drove the recession even deeper. I think Obama, considering the fact that he had not the most cooperative Congress, was successful at getting some stimulus in, but there should have been more stimulus. And I think that the economy is definitely on the upswing. I do not believe we'll have a double-dip recession. But all things considered, I think he's doing a very good job considering what he was dealt with when he got elected.
All right, there was some confusion in the air this week regarding whether Florida Senator Marco Rubio is being or is not being vetted as a vice presidential candidate. Governor Romney says that's a bunk report, that nobody knows what's going on behind the scenes. Meanwhile, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty's stock is apparently skyrocketing. Any thoughts, Margaret Farrow, on who you'd like to see as Mitt Romney's running mate?
Well, I guess I'm willing to wait and see what he decides. And the reason I say that is he knows what he's trying to weigh. He knows things about these people. He knows his chemistry with these people, which the way the vice president's role has been evolving over the years and over the different terms of presidents, I think it's become almost not a partnership, but a much closer working relationship than, say, it has been in some past years, looking back over the decades. So I think first of all, I think they have to, whoever he chooses has to be comfortable. There has to be a level of trust, a level of you know, understanding each other, the chemistry that goes on in that kind of a relationship. So I think he has a right to do that. He has a right to do whatever he wants, quite frankly, if it's legal, in making the decision he wants. And I think any of the names that have been mentioned, I would have no problem and be very comfortable with. I don't think the vice president is going to determine the total success of this election for Romney. I think Romney, as head, top of the ticket, will determine it. Tim Pawlenty, certainly, they're saying, is more folksy and more blue-collar, and that's true. And anybody who has met Tim Pawlenty, as I have, know he's an extremely forthright, very good-thinking former governor. So, and he's worked very hard on the campaign trail with Romney. Paul Ryan, apparently, our Congressman Ryan, is supposed to have extremely good chemistry with Governor Romney. Anyone who's heard Senator Marco Rubio is just impressed with this, I say, young man, because he is, and what he would bring. Not only because he is he's one of that we would bring the Hispanic American support perhaps to the ticket. Just as his own person, he is a strong individual in the public sector. So I think it's an exciting list. I think the news here is, look at the number of leaders we have that are rising to the top on our side of the aisle, and look at the selection that Governor Romney has. And I'll be happy to see whoever he picks, quite frankly, there with him.
Lewis, as a Democrat, do you have any preference on who's Governor Romney's running mate, or doesn't it matter to you?
Well, I agree with Margaret that Romney has to find somebody that he's comfortable with. I mean, that's most important. I know that there are people that have Republicans, prominent Republicans, who anonymously have been, very critical of Rubio, that he doesn't have the gravitas and all these other things. I think the biggest problem that Rubio has is he's kind of new, he's untested, and I think Romney is very cautious, and he's not going to take a risk. And so I think Pawlenty is a very safe bet. I mean, he's conservative. He's the criticism of him is that he's boring. And I think, I think Romney would rather have boring and safe than flashy and risky. So I think that someone like a Pawlenty has a much better chance of getting the nod, as they say.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we will have our Week in Review quiz questions, so stick around for that, and we'll also ask about President Obama's new immigration policy, and then we'll talk some state politics. That's all coming up on the Week in Review. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, it's time for our Week in Review quiz. I'll ask the question, and then you can call in or email your answers within the next few minutes. The phone number, 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@WPR.org. 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org. The winner will get a book of his or her choice that was recently featured on the program. And here is this week's question. German sportswear manufacturer Adidas both unveiled and discontinued a new controversial sneaker this week. What accessory on this shoe caused so much uproar? Again, German sportswear manufacturer Adidas both unveiled and discontinued a new controversial sneaker this week. What accessory on this shoe caused so much uproar? Call your answers in at 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org, and we will give you 5 minutes to get your answers in, and then we'll pick a winner and announce before the end of the show. All right, new topic, President Obama's new immigration policy, and to get us into that topic, we'll take a call from Sam in Madison. Sam, good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, John, and good morning to your guests as well. Thanks for taking my call. Before I ask my question, I want to say that I'm a supporter of Democrats. I supported President Obama. The reason I called is that I wanted to provide the perspective of a legal immigrant in this country. So I'm from India. I came in 2003. And before I was allowed in the country, I actually had to pass three exams. I had to show I could speak English, I could write English, and also I was going to, you know, do something good here. I was allowed to, in a PhD program here. I recently got my PhD, and then I applied for residency card, and I got it. I had to wait for 2 years. So after 7 years, after going through three exams and filling out all the paperwork, finally I was allowed to get in. But what President Obama did just now, I felt like it was like a slap in the face. Like, basically, what he told people like me is that, look, there is no need to follow any law. There is no need to fill out paperwork. Just book a flight into Mexico and then jump the fence. Marry a local, have kids, and voila, you know, you're a U.S. citizen. So that is the part that I don't like. Like, for people like me, it's unfair. And that's the perspective I would provide from the legal immigrant for this issue.
All right, Louis Fortas, what did you think of the president's action on the immigration question this week?
First of all, I supported it. And let me respond to the caller. I understand what he said, that, you know, he worked hard, he got an education, he did everything right, and he became a citizen, or he's about to become a citizen. The people that Obama has given an opportunity to not be deported, and it wasn't, they don't have a path to citizenship, but they're just not about to be deported if they get caught, are people who are under 31, who haven't had criminal records, but who were basically came here as children. They were under 16. They came here. They didn't make that decision. Their parents did. Their parents are still, you know, subject to deportation, but they, because they basically grew up as Americans, depending on what age they came here, at what age they were when they came here, basically, this is, to some of them, this is the only country they've ever known, and so to allow them to stay here and, you know, on a two-year basis, 2 years at a time, without fear of being deported and try to make a contribution to this country. You know, I see nothing wrong with that, and I don't see how that takes away from the caller's efforts, which, again, I think everyone respects. I think, you know, immigrants have contributed so much to this country, recent immigrants, and so, you know, but I don't think it takes anything away from him, but it also is fair to these kids who didn't make the choice to come here. I mean, their parents did,
By the way, a new Bloomberg poll shows that two-thirds of Americans favor President Obama's decision. Margaret, are you one of the 66%?
Well, first of all, I shouldn't be laughing because this is so serious, and I understand where Sam is. I think my two sets of grandparents would understand where Sam is because they came in the hard way, waiting on the list to be able to get in by their country's number of immigrants that would be allowed each year. We're a nation of immigrants, for goodness sakes. That's how we got here, starting right from the very ship that touched our shores, from another land than this one. But the interesting thing is this is such a complex problem. It's a social problem. It's a problem that calls on compassion from us. It's an economic problem. And it would have been solved decades ago. Governor and then President Reagan wished he could have solved it. I think the interesting thing is that we have 1 million immigrants coming in each year. What other country does that? We have an area in our country where people are coming in, not waiting, and that's our whole southwestern border. I think, first of all, we have to close the border. I think President Obama absolutely contradicted himself. I'm sure everybody has seen the clips of what he said last year and during the campaign originally about how this couldn't be done. And it wasn't done. It can't be done by presidential fiat. Well, guess what? It's a presidential election year. It was a purely political move, and he's doing this to try to gain those votes and the votes of their relatives who are citizens and other citizens. I think at the same time he's losing votes by those immigrants who have become citizens here the hard way, as Sam describes he's working toward. And so this was politics again. This was an election year ploy. He's contradicting his own previous statements.
Let's move to a state issue here. We're just about out of time. Tommy Thompson holds more than a 2-1 lead over the closest of three party rivals in the state's GOP Senate primary vote, according to a new poll by the Marquette Law School. However, Undecided is in second place, and perhaps this is a sign of how much this contest labored in the shadow of the recall fight. With less than 2 months to go before the August 14th primary, Thompson leads the Republican Senate field with 34%, followed by Mark Newman at 16%, Eric Hovde at 14%, and Jeff Fitzgerald at 10%. But 25% of those responding to the poll indicated that they were undecided. Lewis, we haven't talked much about the Senate race. Can Tammy Baldwin win that Senate seat for the Democrats?
Definitely. But let's talk about the Republican primary. That's more interesting right now in the sense that it's more imminent. Right now, everyone in the state knows who Tommy Thompson is, virtually everyone, and maybe some of the younger voters don't, but remember a whole lot about Tommy Thompson. But people know who Tommy Thompson is. If there's still 25% undecided, we assume that the vast majority and possibly all of those will not vote for Tommy Thompson, because if they wanted to vote for Tommy Thompson, they know who he is, they would be in his category. So is he a solid front runner in this? Absolutely. Will he end up winning? Probably a good chance, but it is far, far from over. You have this huge undecided. But secondly, what's going to happen now is couple of his competitors, Newman and Hovde, have a lot of money. And the race is going to get really, really nasty and really, really negative. And there's enough issues because of all of what Tommy Thompson has done in his, he's been in Washington. He's been on boards of all kind of corporations that have done various good things and not so good things. And so his opponents are going to start digging all this stuff up, which they've already, I'm sure, done. And they're probably right now in the process of putting together these ads. And it's going to get nasty and negative. So we'll see what happens.
All right. I want to get Margaret in because we're running out of time here. This is a pretty contentious primary. A lot of big names in the mix. Anything surprise you from the Marquette poll?
No, it really doesn't. Again, I would agree with quite a bit of what Lou just said. Unfortunately, money is going to rule. Jeff Fitzgerald down there has very little money. We've got two millionaires and a kind of a new millionaire, and that Tommy is now earning money that after many, many years in public service, his expertise was in his fact that he was attorney and other things that were maybe ignored earlier. He's making money, and I don't think anyone would say that was an unfair situation. It will get nasty. I think Eric Hovde is saying it before the others, trying to inoculate himself against him being the cause of the nastiness. I wish there was a control on that money. I wish people were looking at facts and policies. The only statement I'd make is we have a very interesting primary. Where's the number of leaders on the other side of the aisle? And it's going to be an August primary rather than September. That date has been changed. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
Okay, well, it's time to announce the winner of our quiz question this time, the Week in Review quiz. And here's the question. German sportswear manufacturer Adidas both unveiled and discontinued a new controversial sneaker this week. What accessory on the shoe caused such an uproar? Well, the answer is the ankle shackles. The JS Roundhouse mids were trainers with bright orange ankle shackles on them, complete with a chain connecting the shackles to the shoes. You have to wonder who thought that was a good idea. I don't know. Anyway, the winner of this week's contest is Zoe, who correctly guessed ankle shackles, and I don't think we have a chance to get a response from our two participants, but you're certainly allowed to laugh at Adidas. Everybody else seems to be doing it. Thank you so much, Lewis Fortas and Margaret Farrow, for being our guests this week. It was an enjoyable hour, a great discussion. I really enjoyed having you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you, and take care, Margaret.
You too, Lewis.
Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express newspaper in Milwaukee, former Democratic state lawmaker. Margaret Farrow, former Republican lieutenant governor of Wisconsin and former state lawmaker as well. Bill Martins produced this program. Naya Mukherjee also handled on-air production for us. Congratulations to Zoe for winning the Week in Review quiz. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. It's been a great week. Rob Ferret has the show next week. Have a great weekend. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.